in many ways, it's a fascinating testament to how much this person's life has changed. I mean, the Joe Biden at 77 is an iteration of the man who is different than he was at 57 or, gosh knows, at 27. And that's what I find most interesting about him. You know, as he said later, after bombing out of that 1987 presidential race, didn't even make it to 1988, he said in a moment of frankness, "I lost that race because of my own arrogance." As he said, "I wasn't ready to be president." And you fast forward to today, and it seems that voters may be finding that he is the right man for the moment.
Can you tell me about this expression, "the Kennedys quoted the Greeks, Joe Biden quoted the Kennedys"?
Yeah, there's a short-term reason and a long-term reason why people said that. At the time in 1987, Biden was found to have lifted some of Bobby Kennedy's language for a speech. And it also began to crystallize for people at the time the sense that he was a young man in a hurry, in a sense. He was somebody who saw himself in the tradition of John F. Kennedy, another Irish Catholic who had made his way to the presidency, and Biden sort of wanted to follow in those footsteps. But there was a feeling about him in those earlier years that he hadn't done the preparation. He hadn't done the serious reading. He wasn't ready. There was a spoof resume that circulated in Congress that listed him as having been a member of the Rockettes and an inventor of polyethylene. I mean, it was part of his reputation, and I think it took years before he settled down enough that people took him more seriously.
So we were chuckling just then, but we won't anymore. Many people may not know, in that same era, right after he crashed out of that race, Joe Biden almost died.
He did, and it's an extraordinary piece of his story that we sometimes lose amid all the big political milestones, that within just weeks after dropping out of that campaign, he suffered a pair of aneurysms, a ballooning of the arteries in his brain, and it nearly killed him. He woke up on the floor of a hotel room, unable to move his legs. He was then brought to a hospital in Delaware, and he was in such bad shape that the surgeons summoned a priest to read last rites to him even before his wife could be there. But he did go under the knife and was saved and made an extraordinary recovery, full recovery back to the Senate. But it was 7 months of recovery. And that experience really drove home for me in the course of this work, of this research, the degree to which his life has been about resilience, about bouncing back from things that people thought he might never bounce back from.
I believe somewhere in the book or the narrative, there's the idea that Joe Biden is simultaneously the luckiest man on earth and the unluckiest.
That's right. It's a line that one of his oldest friends and advisors said to me at one point, Ted Kaufman, who after all was his chief of staff, later served in Delaware in the Senate in Joe Biden's seat, said to me, you know, if you ask me to name who's the person I know who's had the greatest luck in life, I'd say it's Joe Biden. After all, he made it this far. And if you ask me somebody who's had the worst luck in life, it is Joe Biden. And I think that combination of qualities is what makes him an essentially interesting American character. Because after all, we are a country right now that can feel to us as if in our history and even in our present, we have these moments of extraordinary fortune and bounty as a country, and then moments of incredible challenge and misfortune right up to this present moment.
So let's fast forward to now. The media are all over President Trump, and with very good reason. Have news organizations grilled Biden in the same fashion as he's become the Democratic nominee?
I think when you look over his career, he has spent decades in the public eye. And as you and I discussed at the outset of this conversation, it was, in fact, media scrutiny that drove him out of that race in 1987. He has been he's a person, of course, who ran for president again in 2007, was then subject to that scrutiny at the time. He has released 22 years of his tax returns. His opponent, of course, has not released his tax returns. I think that the level of scrutiny that surrounded Joe Biden, both in the vice presidency while he was a sitting office holder, has been intense. And I don't think the claim that he hasn't been scrutinized holds up too well.
Would you say, if elected, he will have almost no honeymoon before the progressive people in the party start making demands of his agenda and even, you know, the people he puts in his cabinet? For example, EPA administrator under the Green New Deal. Not that Biden is fully embracing the Green New Deal, by the way.
That's right. He's not in favor of the Green New Deal, but he's in favor of ambitious action on climate change. He believes it's a serious and urgent threat to our children and our children's children. What he will face is pressure from the left side of his party, I'd say about 30 seconds after he gets elected, if he's lucky enough to be elected. And frankly, that's the way the system should work. I mean, the system is that just because he got elected doesn't mean that his party will follow in lockstep. And part of his challenge will be, how does he compose a platform that is enough to encompass the rising demands of, let's face it, the largest generation in American history, are millennials, and they tend to be more liberal than their parents, while also meeting moderates and centrists on common ground where they might be able to get something done. That's a hard problem for him.
Why did Hunter Biden apologize to his dad? And I ask this in the context of a lot of unverified information floating around right now.
It's true. As you know, we're right in the midst of a moment of a kind of flurry of Hunter Biden-related news and allegations, unverified claims that have been amplified by conservative media and others, particularly the Trump campaign and his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. Hunter Biden apologized to his father for, as he put it, putting his father into this awkward moment. Hunter Biden has had, as we all know, a series of challenges, struggles with addiction. It's been no secret. My colleague at The New Yorker, Adam Entis, wrote about it in great detail more than a year ago. To cut to the chase, what I think is that if Hunter Biden ever runs for president someday, we should make sure he releases his tax returns just the way we should probably have expected Donald Trump to release his tax returns. And of course, Hunter Biden is not running for president. It's Joe Biden who's running for president.
What would you say about Joe Biden's communication skills, his ability to convey an easy-to-understand message?
Well, it's funny because over the years, after all, people have dinged him for the fact that he tends to wander off script and will sometimes say things that are everybody calls gaffes. I actually think that what you lose when you get locked into that narrative is his ability to connect with people. I've seen it. All of us who have been out on a campaign trail have watched these moments, really kind of extraordinary moments, when somebody will come up to Joe Biden on a rope line or wherever it is, and they will say to him, "I have suffered in my life. I've lost a family member. I've lost a child." And he'll just stop and talk to that person, even if it means he's running late. And there was somebody in the Obama-Biden political world told me, they said, you know, when Obama and Biden used to work a rope line together, Obama would get to the end and he'd be ready to get into the car and keep going, and Biden would still be only a few feet in. And we used to joke it was because he was lingering too long. But the truth was, it's because people were seeking him out for that kind of connection. And that's the role that he has come to play in American life.
You'll forgive me for not being able to cite the words exactly, but a while ago, didn't Barack Obama sort of tap Joe Biden on the shoulder and say, "You don't have to do this. You don't have to run for president again." And how has that relationship evolved?
Yeah, it's a fascinating relationship. One of the things I went into in this book is exactly understanding how did these two men, so different, 19 years apart in age, completely different in style and generation, how did they end up forming a partnership? And one of the things that happened was that they saw in one another very different attributes, but that they worked together. But by the end of that administration, Obama was very aware that, number one, Joe Biden was still grieving over the death of his son, Beau, in 2015. And number two, we have the possibility of a split Democratic field. You had Hillary Clinton preparing to run for office. And I think on some level, Obama looked at Hillary Clinton as a possible history-making president, the first woman, much as he had been a history-making president himself. And in private, he did make it very clear to Joe Biden that he thought that Biden shouldn't run. And in retrospect, I think a lot of people wonder. Joe Biden was polling in some places better than Hillary Clinton was at the time. And we have to only wonder what would have happened had he run for president. But you've seen Obama come out quite emphatically at this point in the race to try to do what he can to help his friend and former vice president get over the goal line.
A final thought about your book, something I neglected to ask about that you'd like to end with.
I suppose the one thing that comes through in his story, in my time of researching and talking to him, is seriousness. He takes this job extremely seriously, and that's something you might not appreciate from far away.